more shots are going into more arms, but is the state holding back some of its vaccine supply? Two Clay County residents face federal charges from the Capitol siege, and JEA gets an F for its carbon reduction plans. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. Then later, don't throw it away, regrow it. Some tips from Edible Northeast Florida on how to cut down on your food waste. But first, it's Friday, and here to discuss yet another busy week in the news. We don't have slow ones ever. We welcome radio host Angela Spears of Angela Spears Communications. Hey, Angela.
Good morning, Melissa. Happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday. Mike Mendenhall of the Jax Daily Record is here. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, Melissa. It's good to be here.
Good to have you. Dan Scanlon of the Florida Times-Union. Good morning, Dan.
Hey, good morning.
And rounding out our panel, David Jones, reporter with First Coast News. Hey, David.
Hey, Melissa. Good morning. Great to be here.
Great to have all four of you. Already getting lots of calls. So much to go into this week. We will go to all of your calls, emails, and tweets in a moment. The number to join us, 549-2937. But first, let's get into the top story of the week, vaccinations. Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry Thursday says the city will administer second doses of coronavirus vaccines to people who have received their first shots already at the now shuttered Lane Wiley and Mandarin Senior Center sites. If you're one of those people, you'll get a reminder phone call the day before you go to get your second dose, the mayor says. You need to bring your ID and your shot record. Now, at the same time, the state-run vaccination site at the Regency Mall is the new center of action for seniors seeking a COVID shot. This week at the podium up in Washington, the Biden White House and Press Secretary Jen Psaki said Florida has actually only used about half the vaccination doses it has received from the federal government and from the vaccine makers. Governor Ron DeSantis bristled at that statement. And if you're trying to get a vaccination at a public store, well, those appointments go as soon as they are made available. So we're going to begin the hour with a closer look at the race to vaccinate in Florida. 549-2937. David Jones of First Coast News. Let's begin with you. The mayor trying to make sure that people who've received a dose at one of the locally run centers that they have now shut down, that those folks get their second dose. And that is because the state has taken over vaccinations, essentially.
Right. And as you mentioned, anyone who did get their first dose could, one, expect a phone call of a reminder for their second dose, and two, those cards that they received at those vaccination sites actually have the date and time and location of where to get their second dose. So that's important information to keep in mind. That being said, the city really is at the mercy of how much vaccine is coming down from the state level. And as you mentioned, Governor DeSantis putting some blame on the federal level as well for the amount of vaccines that Florida has been receiving. I just looked on the CDC's website. We're at 55% of the doses that Florida has right now have been distributed, and the governor has implied that those extra doses that have not yet been distributed are being held for second doses.
Mm. Okay. Dan Scanlon, you know, as we try to track the vaccination situation, not just in Jacksonville, but statewide, you know, a few weeks ago, state officials were saying the minute we get doses into this state, they go right back out. But now the governor is saying that they are, in fact, holding back some doses to give the second shot to seniors. We don't really have a clear picture, honestly, of where things stand.
Obviously, you do need to get the second dose of that vaccine for it to be fully efficacious. So that is logical on its standing, and yet yesterday the governor announces that public supermarkets will be playing a bigger role in vaccine distribution, which is a cool idea again because almost everybody's got a Publix near them. That said, a lot of folks are saying, what about us? We have no Publixes per se on Jacksonville's north side, so how will those people get to those sites? Remember the hassle over the testing some months back where they finally had to set up mobile sites up on the city's north side to get people tested because they couldn't get to the Regency Square. So it's going to be, where's the source? Can we expand the source? And then we've got to get it out to more people.
Yeah, Angela Spears, so many people waiting their turn patiently. And as Dan pointed out, public stores are not necessarily in underserved communities. And even if you live near a Publix, that doesn't even mean you can get an appointment at a Publix to receive a vaccine because the demand is so high.
I was talking with a pharmacist in the state of Florida, and you know, she was just saying that people, the demand is very high, that you're coming in, that people are coming in every 9 to 12 minutes, right? You know, they're always making an appointment. They're always coming in to get the shot. And one thing we haven't looked at, which when I was talking with her, was, well, what about the pharmacists, too, there in those grocery stores, right, doing their job of doing the shots, providing the medications? And you're right, Melissa, as far as not everybody having access to that. I talked with my neighbor who went to one of the now sites that are closed, the Lane Wiley Center, and she just said when she got there, she was number 277, and she was happy because she was just happy that she was going to get the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to find a better way to distribute this. And I think, too, we need to think about, like you're saying, who's getting it when it goes to the Publix, because Dan mentioned it just a moment ago, that not everybody has access to it.
That's right.
So there's so many different things, Melissa, that go on. We have so many stories, from our people to the workers doing the work. You know, like I said, the pharmacists, are they going to be able to do their job with administering medication? Because that's part of their job, too. Can they do that? Are you going to get the right medication because they're so overwhelmed doing this? So there's just so many different angles, Melissa, to think about with this.
Yeah, and here's another one, Mike. Mendenhall of the Jack's Daily Record, a newly released White House Coronavirus Task Force report, recommended that Florida should actually shut down its restaurants, bars, and gyms once again because mask wearing is not going on in those facilities 100% of the time. The entire state, essentially, most of it, is a red zone. We are still having extremely high transmission of the virus. The White House Task Force says the best way to slow that transmission down is to shut down these establishments for a while in absence of a mask mandate. State officials aren't going to do that, though.
No, you're right. I mean, and that's pretty much been the line from the DeSantis administration since we ended shutdowns mid last year, was that, you know, Florida's open for business. And, you know, you talk to a lot of business owners, you know, on the ground too, a lot of, especially small business owners. And, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword for them because they want to keep their customers safe. You know, they need their customers to, you know, to feel safe when they're in their establishments. But at the same time, they were hit very hard with, you know, with the COVID restrictions and the COVID closures, and they need to continue to make that revenue in order to survive. So it's really a catch-22 for those folks. And one thing I will also say too about the access to Publix, you know, locations. And it was a city official during a city council committee meeting a couple weeks ago was actually floating the idea of transitioning their food desert transportation program, a pilot program that they have with JTA, to possibly in the future using that to transport people to and from COVID-19 vaccination sites. Now, that's still just an idea. It hasn't been fully implemented. And it would also take a lot of work on JTA's part to make sure that those people, you know, riding on the buses are safe and socially distant. But, you know, there are so many factors still to figure out when it comes to distributing this vaccine and getting people access.
Meanwhile, we are at an extremely high risk level in Duval County, according to the latest numbers, St. John's County as well. The number of hospitalized patients in Duval is about the same. ICU occupancy, very high. Deaths are up. The test positivity rate in Duval County, very high. That suggests that cases are being significantly undercounted. Public health experts say you need to avoid indoor activities, avoid non-essential travel, avoid events with more than a handful of people, and continue wearing masks and social distancing. If you are listening to this, you know what we're talking about. Keep those masks on. As the vaccinations ramp up, we want your calls, 549-2937. Yvonne on the south side. Hi, Yvonne. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa and guests. I just want to say that the Regency Vaccination Center, the callback line that they give you a phone call back for your appointment ends in 4501, but there is no identification whatsoever on that line. I had to look back after January the 20th to discover, go through every call that we had, and there were calls where they were trying to reach us. You know, a lot of seniors do not pick up their lines because of spam, and so we missed that opportunity, and now we're waiting for vaccine to be available again. Also, people are calling from their own home phones or cell phones at their own homes to make those return calls to make people's vaccination appointments. And the quality of what messages we did find were so garbled you couldn't make them out.
Oh, wow.
So if the least they could do is to attach an ID to the callback line. That's a very small glitch, but when you're talking about vaccinating seniors first, that's not going to help.
Hmm.
I mean, I personally, as a senior, I feel that teachers should get that first anyway, but I'm just trying to get a vaccine for my husband myself.
Sure.
Still, since the very beginning, no callback.
Well, Yvonne, hang in there. Keep trying. Pick up the phone when they... I'm so sorry you're having trouble. Keep at it, Yvonne. David Jones of First Coast News, a couple of things in her call. We need to mention that the Duval County School Board has asked the governor to put teachers at the front of the line. He's not likely to do that when it comes to vaccinations. And also, as seniors try to get an appointment at the Regency Mall site, the process for registering has been confusing, I think it's fair to say, for some seniors. We've received some emails and calls about that here at WJCT. What are your thoughts?
Well, look, first off, with the teachers, Duval County School Board has been really good about what they can do. They did a vaccine clinic for their educators 65 and over, which from what I heard went really, really well. So under the state guidance, they are doing what they can. Again, though, when you are capping it at 65 and not including essential workers outside of healthcare and first responders, yeah, I mean, it's going to be difficult to get those doses for teachers. That being said, Yvonne on the south side points out something really critical here, which is that there are seniors who are being left behind. I mean, there's no doubt about that. We hear it, as you mentioned, Melissa, you guys hear it too. There are seniors who do not necessarily know how to go through these systems, whether it be Publix, whether it be a state or local system. They're having issues with it. And here, kind of on our level that we're at now, we're trying to bear the brunt of that and trying to answer their questions as best we can. But, you know, one thing we've been talking about over at the station is like this breakdown. You know, if you have the last name starts at this letter, you go at this time, and this letter through this letter, you go at this time. I mean, there's just so many different layers here. There's so many different entities involved. There's so many different ways of scheduling an appointment or not being able to schedule an appointment that, yeah, I mean, I have no doubt that there are a lot of people out there 65 and up who are getting up every single day, you know, trying to get in, spending hours on the computer, spending hours trying to dial through the phone. I mean, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say it's an absolute mess.
Yeah. Okay, Peter on the south side. Peter, you were able to get your vaccine, is that right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Hi, go ahead. Tell us what happened with you.
Oh, okay. Two things. One is I did get my shot at Regency on the very first day.
Great.
I made my appointment. Appointment was at 1:15, got there 15 minutes early, and 3 hours later, I received my vaccine.
That is fantastic.
Yes, so that's good. Now, the other point I wanted to mention was I do go to a gym. I go to LA Fitness, and everyone there seems to be following the protocol extremely well. They're wearing masks when they walk around. They're cleaning the equipment before and after. So at least in that one case, I feel fairly safe in there.
Well, I'm happy to hear that, Peter, and I'm glad to hear you were successfully vaccinated. Dan Scanlon of the Times Union. The state-run site is processing hundreds of vaccinations a day at the Regency Mall. And what about the discussion we're hearing that FEMA and the National Guard could be further activated to provide more support for Florida's efforts to get more people vaccinated?
Well, those of us who have been around a while are aware that over the years when the National Guard, local National Guard, has been sent out to Iraq or wherever, that a medical contingent goes along. So we know we have very talented doctors and nurses who live here who could be assigned through National Guard to assist. I also remember our fire chief a few weeks ago when they started getting their shots saying that they were hoping to have their trained paramedics available at the then Prem Osborne Center to deliver the shots, which would obviously free up nurses and such to go back to working in ERs. So that's the logic right there, is to assign the locals who have the training and assign it through a central location, a central ordering group, so that they're available and it doesn't take away from the private sector or any other sector that's doing this. I've also heard some good news, like that last gentleman, about Regency Square, that you get in and out fairly quickly, I've never seen long lines there, so I thought the old-fashioned telephone system was the smarter way to go, but obviously that other caller said no.
Right, and to people who are having trouble with this, keep calling the number, wait for the call back, be alert to that, and if you're continuing to have issues, send us an email to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We'll try to help you. Doreen in Orangedale. Hi, Doreen.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead.
I have a question. If you've already had COVID and you have the antibodies, do you need to wear a mask still to protect yourself and other people from getting it or from you getting it again?
It's my understanding that you do, Doreen, that there are still a lot of questions about long-term immunity. They don't have a definitive answer on that. It's my understanding that yes, they are still recommending that you mask up if you've already had the virus, at least for now. Does that help you?
Well, that's great. Thank you so very much for clarifying that.
Yeah, thank you. And it's our Friday roundtable as we talk about the biggest stories from the week, 549-2937. We need to get into another big story from the week. The fallout continues from the Capitol riots on January 6th. Two Clay County residents appeared handcuffed and shackled before a federal judge in downtown Jacksonville Tuesday. They're facing charges connected to the siege of the Capitol as Congress was meeting to confirm those Electoral College votes, putting Joe Biden in the White House. 40-year-old Rachel Lynn Pert and 45-year-old Dana Jo Wynn surrendered to the FBI early Tuesday. Prior to appearing before a federal magistrate, they faced charges of unlawful entry on restricted buildings or grounds and violent entry and disorderly conduct on Capitol grounds. Angela Spears, the FBI continues to track people down from the January 6th riots. It hasn't honestly been a very difficult job for the federal authorities because so many people posted videos and photos of themselves doing this. And then we saw this these two from Clay County running away from news cameras the other day. They have to go back to court today, actually.
They weren't running away on January 6th. They were running into our Capitol building. And you're right, Melissa, people posted video and people are turning them in. And it's just a shame that, you know, you're seeing people who are right next door to us, right, who live right with us, who work with us, who were there doing that. And they were running away from cameras. Why? Why so? And we need to call it out. We need to make sure that these people are prosecuted. You know, I'm going to use a term that Joe Scarborough called them the other day. He said, call them what they are, right? They're terrorists. They're Trump terrorists. They're domestic terrorists. And so they've got to face the crime. We cannot forget about what happened January 6th. We can't sweep it under the rug. And those people, they need to face charges because what they did is a crime. It was a terrorist act against our country. Going in there, doing that, participating in the insurrection of our government. And so it was just interesting when I saw all the reporters trying to talk with them that they had nothing to say then. They were saying something, Melissa, on the Capitol steps, January 6th. and, you know, so thank goodness that someone basically turned them in, too.
You know,
I was reading that someone turned them in, recognized them, saw them, and said, hey, I work with this person.
That, yeah.
So keep turning people in.
That has been happening a lot. David Jones, First Coast News, a Pertz coworker at a convenience store in Middleburg apparently recognized her from a flyer of images of intruders at the Capitol building that have been posted. We've been seeing a lot of this. Coworkers, even family members contacting authorities. We're told there are now 10 Florida residents on the Department of Justice list of those facing charges as a result of violence at the Capitol. David.
Yep. And as you mentioned, two of them right here from Middleburg here in Northeast Florida. So, you know, it's not surprising. We knew that people flew into Washington from all different parts of the country. We talk a lot about Florida news, so it's no surprise that some of those people were from Florida. That being said, though, the feds are being very, very thorough in tracking these people down and in bringing them in. I was driving on Southside Boulevard last week and saw a billboard from the FBI with a phone number to call and, you know, asking for tips. So, yeah, people are not the federal government is not playing around here. And as was just mentioned, this was not, you know, an insurrection where they went in and kept their faces hidden and, you know, didn't want to be identified. I mean, they were smiling at Nancy Pelosi's desk. They were smiling, taking, you know, a podium and walking through the halls of the Capitol building when, you know, no masks to be seen anywhere except for those on the faces of the Capitol police officers who were, doing what they can, despite mess ups at their top levels of that organization, to do their job and to protect the Capitol. So, yeah, it's no surprise that we're seeing these arrests being made. It's necessary to ensure that this does not happen in the future. And they definitely want to send a message that the federal government is not going to tolerate something like this. Rightfully so.
It's 549-2937 as we talk about Florida residents now facing federal charges after the January 6th Capitol riots. Jason is in San Marco. Hi, Jason. Go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good
Thanks
morning.
For taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, my comment is that I know that the GOP and supporters of such were referred to as a basketful of deplorables. I don't think that's accurate anymore. It's more like just a Looney Tunes. It's a basket full of loony people. We have this congressman from Georgia who, the more that comes out on her, you're just completely flabbergasted that she was elected or is even considered now a member of the Republican Party. And then recently out in, I believe it was the state of Oregon, where the Oregon Republican Party adopted some bizarre platform that basically said that the whole Capitol insurgency and insurrection was a false flag, Antifa, BLM thing. And they signed off on this as if there was one piece of evidence that supported it, when the mountain of overwhelming evidence shows that it was Trump supporters basically gone mad. And it's just, it's basically beginning to appear like a cult that's totally lost its leader, because let's be honest, he's hiding in Florida because he doesn't want to go back to New York, where he was born and lived his entire life, because he will be much too close to the authorities that want to investigate him and perhaps, you know, take him to court and perhaps try him on crimes that he's committed. It's mind-boggling what the Republican Party has become today.
Jason, thanks for the call. And I think you were referring to Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. She represents a district up north of Atlanta, North Georgia. Mike Mendenhall, you know, let's be clear. QAnon is a conspiracy theory. It's not true. There isn't a cabal of deep state baby-eating, baby-blood-drinking, satanic pedophiles that has infiltrated the Democratic Party and other groups. It's simply a lot of made-up ridiculousness. And so it is very alarming that so many Americans believe this conspiracy theory, that there are now elected officials that believe or have believed or have purported to believe in this conspiracy theory. This is not good for our body politic, that so many Americans hold these false beliefs, and that it did in fact lead in part to a violent insurrection and an attempt to overthrow a free and fair election. This is not a good place for the United States of America to be in right now. And the question becomes, How do we go forward from this?
That's a really tough question, Melissa. You know, we have a fairly sizable segment of the population who really has a distrust for our system. And in the United States, like, our system of government requires, for it to function, requires decorum. It requires compromise and listening to one another, peaceful transitions of power, you know, and that, unfortunately, is not what we had in the 2020 election. And right now you're seeing a national Republican Party who is they're trying to decide, do they stick with the narrative and the agenda and the ideologies of former President Trump, or do they walk away from Trump's ideology and try to figure out, you know, who they are moving forward? But, you know, you've even seen it, you know, from Florida Representative Matt Gaetz. He actually went out to Wyoming to campaign against the number three Republican in the House, Liz Cheney, who voted for impeachment of President Trump. So there's an internal battle going on in the GOP, just as much as there is skepticism amongst a segment of the U.S. population. And, you know, when you see those people running away from the media cameras, you're seeing a group of people who are distrustful of institutions like the media, but the realization is starting to sink in that there's no one in Washington that's going to pardon them, that's going to, you know, that their act is going to lead them into real trouble.
Kenneth in St. Augustine. Hi, Kenneth. Go ahead.
Hello. Hello, are you there?
Yep, go ahead.
There were several witnesses on that day that, on the 6th, that did witness a bus pull up full of people, several buses actually, that did not have any sort of gear on other than body armor, and they put MAGA stuff on and rushed the Capitol building.
Okay, so
they definitely didn't come there in support of that group of people that was already there peacefully protesting.
Okay, I'm not sure what you're getting at, Kenneth, but I appreciate the call. And you're right in that a minority of people at the Capitol siege became violent, but breaching the Capitol building is still a federal offense. Johnson in Mandarin. Hi, Johnson.
Hi. I just am a little bit nervous about where our whole country is at this time. When I hear certain senators say things like Ted Cruz or Hawley, I think was his name, where they wanted to question the Pennsylvania's count off of the votes, it made me feel like, well, what do they know and their constituents know about Pennsylvania and Florida and Texas? They don't know anything. Most people don't even know a lot about their own state constitutions, let alone someone else's. And then when I think about this green lady making decisions because she's on the education or the labor board, which is for the whole country and not just for the state of Georgia, and her ideas are so inconsistent with the majority of the country, it makes me very nervous that she's going to make decisions that are going to negatively impact everyone.
There have been calls. Thank you for that call, Angela Spears. There have been calls to remove Marjorie Taylor Greene from that committee and any committee assignments. Whether the leadership in the House, the Republican leadership in the House, will do that, it remains to be seen. But let's be clear: the attempt to invalidate the Electoral College results was ultimately an attempt to say that the votes of primarily millions of Black Americans in large metropolitan areas in swing states didn't count. That is at the heart of this insurrection attempt. And we need to be clear about that.
And Melissa, we need to be clear that we had a congressman from our area who voted for that.
You're talking about Representative Rutherford.
I sure am, yes. We have to be clear, and we must let people must remember that as well. And I think, Melissa, to answer your question, where do we go from here? You know, we have to hold people accountable. When people commit crimes, we report on crimes all the time here in our city, right? And people get arrested, and justice is served. So you have to be held accountable. And then it goes a step further. How do you, you know, we're not going to change hearts of everybody, because unfortunately we have racist people in America, right? We have people who have hate in their heart. So we're not going to change those people. But I go back to, and I've said this on the show before, that Senator Cory Booker once said, I can't change people's hearts, but I can change laws. And we have to make sure that people are held accountable and that no person is above the law. And it starts right at the top, Melissa. So that's one way that we have to move forward. I think in order for us to move forward, we have to see justice done. We cannot forget what happened January 6th. We cannot forget the names of those people who voted to overturn our results, our elected, who voted to overturn the Electoral College votes, right? Who wanted to overturn our votes. Remember those names. Remember them when it comes election time.
Dan Scanlon, you know, many of the people that traveled to Washington to take part in the insurrection said they were doing this because President Trump asked them to, and they genuinely believed, based on lies from the president and media outlets and sometimes their elected officials, that the election was stolen. The people that stormed the Capitol genuinely believed in this lie. They even told some of the people now facing charges, say, they told the FBI, well, no one said we couldn't go into the Capitol. Nobody told us it was against the law. And so a couple of thoughts come to mind. One, we need better civics education in this country. And two, we need to do a better job of combating lies and disinformation.
Correct. The Middleburg couple, specifically according to the FBI, said that they were interviewed by agents a week ago and stated that while present at the U.S. Capitol, no one instructed them that they could not enter. Well, you know, the times I've toured the Capitol, even in peaceful times past, it took a while to get in there. The FBI statement also said that Mr. Wynn, Dana Jo Wynn, posted a video as they were driving to Washington saying they're on their way to D.C. because us as American patriots, we're tired of this. It's time to take a stand. I never really knew how deep and corrupt all this was. And so they believe that. And final thought, as a journalist, I'm getting emails from the Republican Party and the Democrat Party, and there is such a divide between the two and their content. I don't know how those parties will ever walk across the aisle and get things done right now.
MJ in Clay County. Hi, MJ. Happy Friday. Go ahead.
Hi, Melissa. I just wanted to make a comment that I think we are in this situation because Republicans are choosing not to tell the truth. Just as we were taught in school and in church and all around, we tell the truth. We elected a president, the previous president, that chose not to tell the truth. And that's a big problem. We cannot do that. And I take my comment off the air.
Thanks, Jimmy. And I know there are lots of folks still waiting on hold to talk about this topic, but we have to move on here on the roundtable and get into some other news and notes from the week. I want to make quick mention of a new report from the Sierra Club looking at utility climate pledges. They gave JEA an F, a flunk for their climate goals. According to the new report, the dirty truth about utility climate pledges, Jacksonville's city-owned utility is aiming to make 30% of the energy it provides carbon neutral by the year 2030. But David Jones, First Coast News, that goal is far less ambitious than many of the other utilities included in the report. They gave JEA actually a score of 4 out of 400. JEA says that they are working to diversify their electric generation portfolio with more renewables. Your thoughts?
It is low. That being said, it's about on par with some other major utility companies, including the ones that were throwing their hats in the ring to when the discussion of privatizing JEA was on the table. So, it is low. I'm looking at what you included, this statement from JEA's media relations coordinator, and they're saying, you know, we're continuing to diversify our electric generation portfolio, with the addition of renewable energy resources and so on and so forth. I mean, look, it's going to be a long process for these utilities to move toward more renewable energy, and I would think that it doesn't help when the governor of the state himself has refused to even use the term climate change, hearkening back to the to Governor Scott's era when that term was banned from the lexicon of the state's vocabulary of the state government. So, it's going to be a long process. We are really in the epicenter, though, of the climate change discussion when it comes to the United States and Jacksonville specifically. And that's why resiliency is going to continue to be a huge, huge discussion point locally.
That's right. Mike Mendenhall of the Daily Record, you've been covering this. The city is getting serious about resiliency. We are in a coastal community. This does put more pressure on utilities like JEA to get more aggressive with their carbon reduction planning.
It does. And, JEA is definitely thinking, they're thinking about it, but it's, you got to do more than thinking. They retired the St. John's River Power Park, in recent years. They recently also, retired, their share of Plant Share. It's a Georgia coal fire power plant. And they're replacing that with a purchase power agreement with FPL, Florida Power and Light. But that most of that power, for at least for the first 10 years, is going to come from natural gas. And, although the GEA is going to be increasing its emission-free nuclear load with Plant Vogtle in coming years and the 250 megawatts of solar, they're still going to be relying with almost half of its energy, a base load for natural gas, which is still a fossil fuel, still puts out emissions. Yesterday during the JEA board meeting, one of the board members, Joe DeSalvo, said that the American Public Power Association is starting to lobby Congress to try to get tax credits for public power institutions to invest more in renewable energies, solar, wind. So that could be a further incentive for utilities like JEA to invest in renewable energy. But that's still just in the lobbying phase. That there's still a long way to go there.
Yeah. Dan Scanlon, the statement from JEA says they plan to reduce their carbon emissions by 60% by the year 2024 when they close the St. John's River Power Park, as Mike mentioned, and Plant Share, as well as adding the Plant Vogtle nuclear piece of energy to the mix and 250 megawatts of solar in JEA's service area. Here is the energy mix for 2019 JEA has on its website. Nuclear 0%, coal 16%, natural gas 49%, petroleum coke 9%, oil 0%, renewables 1%, and other 25%. So that's where things are, at least right now.
The JEA used to be such an oracle of solar power. They even had solar cells at its downtown operation to recharge vehicles. I don't know where that's gone, but it's sad to not see that in Florida, with all the sun we've got, that there isn't a solar power farm somewhere. JEA does have some jet turbine, very low emissions, high efficiency power plants, one off of Phillips Highway. But again, that doesn't make up for the coal fire that we've had for years and the inability to hook into any nuclear power, which even that isn't a smart choice sometimes.
Angela Spears, Dan brings up a good point in that here in the state of Florida, due to special interests that have really held back the progression of solar power, we're way behind where we need to be in Florida when it comes to solar usage. You go to a country in Europe that gets a lot less sun, for example, than we do, and there are solar panels everywhere. We have a long way to go. Nope, I think we might have lost Angela Spears.
I'm sorry. No, I'm here, Melissa. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yes, we do have a long way to go when it comes to solar panels. You hear some people say, is it cost effective? How much does it cost to install? So we'll have to see where we go and what happens next with that.
Yeah.
And it's just another story about JEA, right?
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
JEA coming out.
Yeah, David Jones, it's not as though JEA hasn't been through the ringer in a bunch of news cycles for the last few years. They continue to make news all across this community. Okay, we're having trouble with our connections, the perils of social distancing in this COVID age. But this is our panel today, David Jones, Angela Spears, Mike Mendenhall. Dan Scanlon, and yours truly. I'm going to take one more call on renewable energy. It's Andrew in Orange Park, and then we'll wrap things up with a couple of other news and notes. Andrew, you're on the air. Go ahead. Hi, Andrew. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Melissa? Love your show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say FPL actually down south has a huge solar farm, essentially down there, just around kind of like by Lake Okeechobee. And it would be really nice to see if JEA could do something like that, because it is just a great source of energy, definitely with solar price panels going down.
Thanks for that, Andrew. That's, yeah, thank you for that information. Okay, we're almost out of time, but I want to make note of a couple of interesting tidbits from the week, beginning with the fact that we're hearing that Mark Brunell was just tapped as the QB coach for the Detroit Lions. Okay, so that leads us into a sports discussion, right? So congratulations to Mark. Good to see that. But finally, speaking of sports, did you hear about the suggestion this week by State Chief Financial Officer Jimmy Patronis? He would like to see the Summer Olympics be moved from Tokyo, Japan to Florida. And unfortunately, that provided a little fodder for Late Show host Stephen Colbert. Take a listen.
Summer 2021, the Olympics come to Florida. The Americans are off to a strong start in the 500-meter moped leg-shaving sprint. Skeet DeMont smashing the record in the highway boat relay. They're into the stretch in the 50-meter pairs shopping cart shuffle. Look at the determination on Delroy Eustace urban jet skier. The training, the passion, the heart. Olympic dreams do come true.
Now, that's kind of mean, Dan Scanlon, but, you know, Florida is always the punching bag. Let's point out, Jimmy Patronis mentioned Jacksonville. He said when most states shut down their sporting events, the city of Jacksonville hosted the Ultimate Fighting Championship, and the NBA set up the bubble to hold games in Orlando. Okay. Everybody had a good laugh about this, but you have to at least give it to state officials for swinging for the fences, right?
Well, I did talk to Mr. Patronis this week about a few other things, but he did mention to me that it says Florida has a long summer, so the Summer Olympics could be held here at any time, well past whenever Tokyo would hold it, which would be July. He also pointed out that we've held Super Bowls here. We've got 12 universities. We've got all the facilities. And the Daytona 500, the Super Bowl of racing. So he says if any state can do it, we can.
Hey, why not? Well, I want to thank you, Dan Scanlon. Also with us, David Jones of First Coast News, Angela Spears Communications, and Mike Mendenhall of the Jax Daily Record. Thanks to all four of you, and have a great weekend.
Thanks,
you
Melissa.
Too. You too.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Happy Friday. Have a good weekend.
You too. Okay, in a moment, we are going to speak with actor David Payne as he portrays literary legend C.S. Lewis in a one-man show this weekend at the Times Union Center. Also, speaking of sustainability, don't throw it out, grow it in your yard. How you can reduce food waste. A conversation with Edible Northeast Florida editor Lauren Titus next. Keep listening. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9. We'll be right back.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. Serious injury cases are complex, and civil trial attorneys present the evidence juries need to see and hear. More at waynehogan.law.
JEA has proudly served Northeast Florida for over 100 years by volunteering in our local schools and neighborhoods in support of the causes our customers care about. because we're committed to this community we all call home. More information at domorewithjea.com.
Taxes, the environment, energy, education, health care. A state that's gaining nearly 1,000 new residents every day and the ongoing quest for resources to meet that growing need. These are critical issues that affect everyone in Florida, and they're just some of the issues we follow every week on Capitol Report. It's your direct connection to what's going on in Tallahassee and what it means to you.
Tonight at 6:30 on WJCT News 89.9.
This week on Science Friday, President Biden released a national wartime-like COVID-19 plan. What will it take to deploy that effort? Plus how the Endangered Species Act might be failing the struggling Florida panther, among other species.
The government doesn't have the gumption or the resources and suffers from pressures that undermine the enforcement of this very popular law.
All on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
This afternoon at 3 here on WJCT News 89.9.
Homeland Security puts the country on alert for more right-wing extremist attacks. Wall Street comes under fire.
The arrogance of the shorts is shocking to me.
And poet Amanda Gorman gets ready for another big stage at this year's Super Bowl. Politics and poetry on this week's Friday News Roundup. Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, actor David Payne portrays literary legend C.S. Lewis, author of the Narnia series, in a one-man show this weekend at the Times Union Center. Here's a quick preview from Payne.
I think portraying anyone turns out to be a challenge, because in order to make the audience believe, you've got to really try and find the character you're portraying. So I did a lot of study on Lewis. In the preparation for the play, at least a year of study, and that enabled me to try and find the character, the man behind the books. One of the things I found out was he had a wonderful sense of humor. People, when they come along to the show, will be surprised how much they laugh.
And we all need that. So check out An Evening with C.S. Lewis at the Times Union Center for the Performing Arts this weekend. Tickets and information at fscjartistseries.org. Well, finally, this hour, the new issue of Edible Northeast Florida is out, and the theme this month is sustainability. In particular, don't throw it, regrow it. That's the mantra, and it's how you can reduce food waste. Editor Lauren Titus is on the line. Hey, Lauren, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. This is something we all need to do a better job with, reducing our waste in the kitchen, reusing kitchen scraps maybe to make stock, maybe even starting a compost pile. But you say there are other things we can do. What does don't throw it, regrow it mean?
Yeah, so when you look at the statistics about food purchase that's wasted, up to 30 or 40% of it going into landfills, it really makes you stop and think about how you can, little by little, reduce the amount of food that you throw away. And one of the fun ways to do that is to regrow common food scraps right in a little jar or container of water. For instance, green onions, that's one of my favorite ones to regrow, because it's a really quick process. So when you're using a green onion, you leave about 2 or maybe 3 inches of the white bulb, where typically there's some roots coming out of it anyway when you purchase it, and just trim that little bit off, put it in a glass of water. Don't cover it completely with water, but just cover it about halfway up. And within 2 days, you're going to see green growing out of the top of that root bulb. And it'll keep growing as long as you've got it in water. And you can even plant it in the ground if you want to keep the growing fun ongoing after it reaches its limits in the container.
And you also recommend that we reuse everyday packaging, like a yogurt cup or a milk carton, an egg carton, or even a toilet paper roll, and repurpose those into planting containers as a way to cut down on our waste, correct?
Yeah, exactly. This is a fun project for kids to get involved with, because they can see, first of all, how easy it is to grow some things, where their food comes from, but also how to repurpose and reduce your trash of other common containers as well. There's a popular yogurt that's out right now that comes in a glass jar, and I recently started a little end of celery in one of those, and I feel like Jack and the Giant Beanstalk watching the celery grow with the leaves coming out of the top of it.
Very cool. And so basically this is a way to cut down on food waste because the statistics on this are horrifying. Americans throw away millions of pounds of food every year, don't they? Don't we?
Yeah, exactly. According to the EPA, food is the single largest category of material in our municipal landfills. And that, you know, creates methane, and methane is bad for our environment. So the more that we can eliminate food in our landfills, the better our environment and our air is going to be.
This is all within the pages of the new issue of Edible Northeast Florida on newsstands all over town right now or online. What else is in this month's issue?
We've actually got some great recipes that help in your efforts for total utilization in the kitchen. For instance, we've got a hackeray, turnip, and kohlrabi hash. It's hard to say all that. Mm-hmm. But it uses the greens from both the turnips and the kohlrabi to make this wonderful, really easy breakfast for dinner dish that the whole family can enjoy. Broccoli orange salad that uses the stalks and the leaves from broccoli plants. So if you're growing it or you're getting the whole stalk from the farmer's market, just throw it all into this salad and have a really delicious, nutritious meal. And then my third favorite recipe from this issue is carrot pulp muffins. Mariah from Southern Roots Filling Station created this recipe for us. And juicing right now is a really popular way to get nutrients, but what do you do with all of that pulp after you've juiced? This recipe makes great use of that pulp, and it's, you know, doubly nutritious. And then if you happen to have muffins left over, you can repurpose them as carrot juice pulp muffin French toast.
Nice. I have a tweet, by the way, from Jane West of Jane West Law and a picture of her dual composters and her three garden beds. She says, they have given me so much joy and peace in this pandemic. I think that is the case, Jane, for so many of us. Focusing on just cooking and being at home. Get some ideas in the new issue of Edible Northeast Florida. It's out now. Lauren Titus is the editor, always doing great work. Lauren, thank you so much.
Thank you, Melissa. We appreciate it.
And that's our show. Make sure to tune in today at noon for the Florida Roundup, our live statewide call-in program rounding up the biggest news from the week. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.